Thanks for downloading this episode of Cork Talk with me, Tim Atkin. A weekly conversation with some of the most famous people in the world of wine.
This podcast is brought to you in partnership with Nomacork by Vinventions. Driven by a commitment to innovation, the new plant-based Nomacork Green Line offers significant improvements in wine closure performance. Thanks to a rigorous oxygen ingress rate, you can decide which cork is best for your wine, whether it's for young and fresh wines or for those with aging potential.
Almudena Alberca is Spain's only female master of wine, as well as the technical director of Entre Canales Domecq y Hijos, a group that makes wines in six different Spanish regions, including Rueda, Rioja, and Ribera del Duero. She's something of a phenomenon. Listen to us chat about why she chose wine rather than cheese as a career, her time in New Zealand, the finer points of the Tempranillo grape, and how rediscovered minority varieties could be a partial answer to climate change. Hi, Almudena, how are you?
Very good, Tim. How are you?
It's a little bit rainy here, very stormy. What's it like? You're at home in where? In Valladolid?
Yes, I'm at home in Valladolid, and it's very sunny and clear skies.
I'd much rather be in Spain than London right now.
Maybe right now, yes. Last week it was terribly hot.
Terribly hot. Yeah. And you know, when's the harvest going to be this year, do you think?
I believe that it's going to be pretty similar than last year, but slightly later. I mean, for Rueda, I think it's going to be the last week of August or first week of September, and Ribera maybe the third week of September. But we don't know yet because we didn't start the Veranison. I think the first little grape somewhere start to turn out the color. So we need to wait until 50% of the crop is turned in red color.
Fantastic. Listen, I mean, it's great to have you on Cork Talk. You know, you're the only female master of wine in Spain. You've had this amazing career. I can't believe how much you've achieved when you're still, you know, just into your 40s. It's amazing. I shouldn't tell anybody in your 40s, but anyway, you don't look it. Listen, so I want to have a first question. You were born in Madrid and you were brought up in Salamanca. Just, you know, were your family in wine? Because wasn't your grandfather have a vineyard at some point?
I'm the first generation in wine, although all my family is coming from Zamora area, from Arribes del Duero, this little territory, which is very amazing and beautiful. And my grandfather used to have a small vineyard, like a vegetable garden and a small vineyard. And we were helping them every season for harvest. And particularly, I remember Easter when it was very cold yet, but we went to help him to pick up all the pruning leftovers, and I wasn't very happy about that time.
Did he make wine from the grapes?
Yes, he was making wine, but he was making wine in a traditional style, blending red and white varieties. So it was a sort of claret.
And he drank it himself?
Yes, all the year long. And I remember that he didn't drink too much water. It was all the time it was wine, and he has this special summer drink that it was a bit of wine, a bit of water, and a bit of sugar. And he was drinking all of this this liquid all the summer in a very particular and special jar. And so, he always tells you, like, do you want a little bit? And we were drinking.
I mean, you've done so many, you've got so many qualifications, I've lost count. But you started out, didn't you, studying agricultural engineering? And I've read you said somewhere that you could have ended up working in cheese or biscuits, cookies, yeah? When did you decide to become a winemaker?
I study engineer, specialized in food technology, because I always love food and cooking and the transformation and the science behind all of that. So after studying, I was so impressed and amazed and in love of pretty much every single process in the industries of food industries. But my first step after the university, it was in a winery. in Cooperativa El Soto. And I just fell love at the first instance. So I leave the food processing just for my house and for friends, just as a hobby.
But and do you like to cook?
I love cook.
Yeah, love cooking. Yeah,
I love cooking. Yeah.
So it could easily have been cheese. I mean, if your first job had been in a cheese company, then you might have been a cheese master of cheese.
From my point of view, from now, I don't think so.
Okay.
You know, now I'm more interested in fermentation process. So I would love to be also a cheese ager. How do you?
Yeah, cheese maker, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah, cheese maker, yeah. But not the process of making
the affinage. I don't know what you call that. Maturing, yeah.
Maturing.
Yeah.
Cheese maturing.
So, I mean, and your first job was at this Cooperativa de Soto in Tierra del Vino de Zamora, yeah? And I've read that you spent most of your time cleaning tanks. Is that true? I mean, what else did you learn? Did you learn anything else other than how to clean a tank?
This is true because they were just two people working during the year, a wine maker and a cellar hand. They were pretty tight to make all the year round work in the winery. And I was cleaning a lot, but I was doing the lab and so many other things. But out of this process, I will say that I understood clearly that you need to be very precise and every detail counts. And you need to be very, very strict in the sanitation and cleaning of the winery, because it's the place that where you are going to put all your harvest and is the starting point for everything that you are going to do.
Because a lot of cooperatives are not very clean, are they? I mean, I just mean in Spain, I mean everywhere, right?
Everywhere. Yeah. I can tell you that I remember that it wasn't very clean. So I was cleaning and cleaning and cleaning. It was like three times the full winery. But at the end, it was a very good result. So yeah. I take this on my experience.
I mean, that was a good start. And then you got this amazing job as the assistant winemaker at Vinyes La Cenit, yeah? Where you just started to make your name pretty quickly, really, as a young winemaker. How did you get that job?
It was a very interesting process, and it was a blended process with the Cooperativa El Soto, because the year that I started in El Soto, Amy Hopkinson, this New Zealand winemaker, which is amazing, and the owners of Viñas del Zenit, they were doing a trial in Cooperativa El Soto. This is why I was cleaning twice massively, because they were very nervous about having guests in the winery. So they were doing a small trial to check the quality that they expect from the area. They have a little bit of experience, not with Amy, another experience before, and they wanted to do this final trial before build a winery. So I was working a lot with the Cooperativa Soto, and also I was helping them a lot to set up everything. And because I clean very well.
It was your cleaning skills that got you the job, right?
Yeah. Yes, because Amy were very strict for that and very perfectionist. And I think he saw that I was working very hard. Basically, I think this was the major thing that she saw on me.
I mean, you've mentioned Amy Hopkinson, who was this New Zealand winemaker, who was your boss, I suppose, to start with at Zenit. And you then went to New Zealand, didn't you, to do a harvest at Vidal. I mean, New Zealand, it seems to me, has played quite an important role in your life. Is that true?
Totally true, because it was a massive experience, or a 360 degrees experience, because it changed a lot of things in my life, in my way of looking at things, and as well it was the point where I decided that I wanted to be a winemaker. Yeah. Before I was enjoying a lot, but for me it was like an adventure. And after coming from New Zealand, it was like, this is what I want to do, because I just fall in love 100% there.
Yeah. And is it true it was the first time you've been on a plane on your own?
On my own, yes. Now this seems strange and look a bit different, no? I mean, I was 25 years old, and nowadays any person or everyone pretty much with 25 years old were traveling all around and to visiting so many places. But back on the times when I had 25 years old, no, I didn't have this opportunity. I was traveling to Portugal or Andorra, where you can travel by car. And I went with my fellow students from the university to Greece, but we went all together. So suddenly I took this plane, traveling to the Antipodes on my own, super scared, doing a lot of escapes with the plane. So Germany, Singapore, New Zealand. I was like, oh my God, I couldn't believe it. I think I was super nervous all the trip. It was a massive experience, honestly.
I can believe it. I mean, historically, people didn't travel much. You know, you would have people living in Rioja who would think that Ribera was a long way away. You know, never mind Madrid or maybe Bilbao, they go to Bilbao. But, you know, I think it's so changed so much, isn't it, really, that we're the generation that flies everywhere, right?
It changed a lot because even if I look at me, like, I will say that since I started to study the Master Wine program and for the last 10 years, I was traveling probably one or two times every month.
Yeah.
So it's something that seems to be very strange when you look back. Mm-hmm. And also at that time, I need to work to get a little bit of money in order to be able to travel. So with 25 years old, just after studying your first degree, there were just a few opportunities for that.
Yeah. Listen, I want to talk to you about Tempranillo, because Tempranillo, a bit like New Zealand, has been a bit of a theme in your life. I mean, even your Master of Wine research paper was about Tempranillo. Just tell us, for people who are listening who don't know Tempranillo well, about the personality of the grape, really. I mean, what do you like about it?
I quite like everything of the Tempranillo. There are a couple of things that I don't like, maybe, but I think it's four wheels variety, because it can be adapted to many different climates. It's a variety that it can express the terroir very easily. And also makes very good wines and great quality wines with a single variety, and also blends good with other varieties. So I think it's a very beautiful variety. I can say a couple of things that I would love to to make it better.
Like, tell us. We all know.
pH and acidity, as we all know, pH is always, or particularly with the climatology of nowadays, or with the climate change and everything, the pH is pretty high normally. By the time that you get good tannins or very ripe tannins, and the acidity also turns or normally tends to be low, or moderate. These two things can be adjusted at the winery, but I mean, I'm looking at the variety as a balance, no? I want to see all the balance together in the grape. I'd rather to be or to avoid to make adjustments, but sometimes it's complicated.
Do you like Tempranillo more than Garnacha, which is the other great Spanish grape, maybe with Mencia, red grape?
I mean, I think each of the varieties has a lot of beautiful things and special things that make it different from the other. And I cannot choose one. I mean, I love to work with Tempranillo, but I'm doing a Mencia in Valdeorras, and I think it's very special, and it has a completely different personality, which I'm in love of it. And also Garnacha, I think it's a different challenge as a winemaker to work with the variety and to get as much as possible from it. I did a Garnacha when I was in Atauta, and I did a Garnacha in Toro. I managed to pick up some old vines and old vineyard that it was amazing. And also I enjoyed. I think I can see the beauty in each of the different varieties, and this is the challenge as a winemaker.
I mean, you mentioned Domine de Atauta, and you went there while you were still at Zenit. You were doing two jobs in 2010, which is this incredible place in Ribera del Duero, in the east of Ribera del Duero, in Soria, very high. I mean, just tell us a little bit about what it's like working in that place. And were you living there? Because it's pretty isolated, isn't it?
It's one. Atauta is an amazing place. Mm-hmm. It's like magic. I will mm-hmm. say it's like sometimes it's like the Lord of the Rings, no?
Yeah.
The film when you get into different different worlds with different people. Mm-hmm. For me, it has a totally different personality, starting from the energy of the place. Because of the thing that you said, it's very isolated. It's one of the most isolated areas in all Europe and, of course, in Spain. So you can feel the energy of the nature and you don't feel any other energies around from humans or from electricity. So starting from there, I think it's an incredible, incredible place. For me, it was a great opportunity because I was coming from Zenit, which is the most... occidental is the last part of the Duero River before getting into Portugal.
The most westerly, yeah.
I did an Spanish. there in Zenit, it was very old vineyards, also prefiloxera, small parcels, but with a completely different climate. And let's say more warm climate. And when I get into Atauta, so with this 1,001 sometimes up to 1,100 meters altitude. We were sharing the small parcels and the Tempranillo, all vines, and but the altitude, the climatology, and the small valley of Atauta itself, it is completely different. The soils, the nature there, and how the Tempranillo express is something from another world, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, with higher natural acidity, yes?
Yeah, natural acidity, but I want to say that also the soil is very rich in calcareous rock. So this is not helping to the pH either.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is the problem with the Tempranillo. It doesn't matter where you are.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, 2015, your next step, you went to Viña Mayor, where you're still making wine, obviously, as you went there as the technical director. And it's much larger volume operation. You know, Atauta is almost Burgundian. It's very small, isn't it? And making wines, you were making, I don't know, half a dozen wines from different parcels. You're now making, you know, much bigger volumes of wine. I mean, just what are the advantages and disadvantages of working in a big winery as opposed to a small one? Do you blend across the region?
This is a great question because even I think I didn't think it before about the pros and cons. I would say that in general, it's a different project and you need to approach it in a different way. What for me, the bigger con maybe or the most complicated thing is that or sometimes all the decisions or the things takes longer because the chain of decision is slightly longer. Although I'm deciding pretty much everything for the things that are happening in the winery, but in general we need to be agree in order to work, of course. And on the other way, I will say that also there are more things to tackle. I will say. Because most likely I'm doing less number of wines than I was doing before.
Yeah.
And I say that each tank or each wine gives you the same amount of problems. It doesn't matter the volume because you need to think about it in the same way. How I wanted to make it, where I'm going to source my grapes, how I'm going to vinify them, how I'm going to age. So you need the same energy is dedicated to each of the process. So I will say that most likely in Atauta, I had the same number of tanks that maybe I have now. But here, it was a completely different project that I need to start it since the beginning, deciding even the origin of the grapes that we were going to pick up to each of the styles of the wine that we are going to produce.
But you've changed the range, haven't you, at Viña Mayor? You started to bring in some smaller volume parcel wines, haven't you?
Yeah, we started since the beginning doing a selection of grapes all around Ribera that I didn't answer your question before. We are blending across the region and we are selecting different styles of grapes and different age, different fruit profiles, different tannin structure to each of the wines, depending what we want to make. And also we are doing a great selection of all vineyards for the Reserva and for Secreto, located in higher altitude areas, mostly in Burgos and between Burgos and Soria, just there in the border, the political border between the two provinces. We are buying a lot there. So, because I like the expression of these grapes and also a lot of very old vineyards isolated in different areas, looking for very special styles or different special fruit profiles, basically.
Yeah, because Atauta is an estate, isn't it? It's making estate wines, whereas here you can buy grapes from across what is a very diverse region. People don't appreciate that, I think.
Yeah, Ribera is so different everywhere you go. Even in the different villages along the Ribera del Duero, you are going to find completely different personality. This is why I always say to distributors or even my boss when say like, this shop has different Riberas. And I say, of course, they need to have it because there are so many different styles that they are not going to compete, depending what you want. And this is how I see Ribera del Duero. It's like, I imagine that it's like going to a shop of spices where you can find so many different flavors, textures, aromas. And this is how I see it. What I want. I want fruit, or I want concentration, or I want acidity, or I want fresh and ripe strawberries or forest fruit. So I look to Ribera del Duero and say, it's like a radar. And looking like, okay, I need this village, or I want a little bit more clay, or I want more sandy. And this is how I'm going to pick up or select the vineyards that we are going to work with.
It's interesting because the image of Ribera del Duero is that all the wines are, you know, oaky and deeply coloured, and they're made to age. And they sometimes, you know, people think they lack charm. Are you saying that people don't understand the diversity of the region?
I think there are truth in the two sentences that you show up, because it's true that in the past, or even just a few years ago, the style of Ribera, it was very concentrated wines with a lot of oak. We cannot generalize these sentences or these affirmations, but this is generally we can find this style of wines. In the last 5 years, I would say, or maybe a bit less, the producers and winemakers are changing a bit and focusing more on the terroir and less in the aging process strictly. Sure. Although I need to say that Tempranillo has affinity to oak, I can see that the Tempranillo, after passing through French oak or American oak, is increasing the quality in a way. But I think a better use of the oak is going to increase more these differences between villages that we can find in Ribera del Duero, that I think is so different. It can be, well, you know very well, Burgundy, but I think you can find this amount of differences between villages and areas within Ribera del Duero.
I think so. Listen, I want to talk to you a little bit about your winemaking style. I mean, does it make any sense to talk about a feminine style of wine? I know you were in an article recently in a paper in The Observer in London, you know, all these famous Spanish female winemakers. I mean, does that concept mean anything to you? I mean, does your winemaking feminine, do you think?
I can find something that I like on the terminology, but I never saw myself on that sense, because I think it's a personal sensitivity to the wine making process. And I can see different styles of wine between females and males. I will say that I don't like too much the terminology, but I can see that there are some differences between winemakers when they are female or male. But I cannot find the same differences because they are female or male. I can see different styles or different philosophies of approaching the winemaking processes.
Yeah, I think it's more maybe more of a French thing. The French always talk about, you know, c'est un vin très féminin, you know, it's kind of...
Because they are very...
very what?
Because the majority of the winemakers are men in France. Yeah. Or consultants are also men.
Yeah. Is it becoming easier for women? Is it becoming is it becoming easier for women to go into wine? I mean, partly thanks to people like you. You know, you become a master of wine and you have a very, very high profile job. Is that making it easier for other women to become winemakers?
Yeah, I think it's changing slowly, but it's changing. We can see more female winemakers more often. But also I'm going to tell you that it depends a bit on the areas. There are a lot of female winemakers in Rueda, for example.
Yeah, yes.
But the majority in Ribera del Duero are men. And what we see less is winemakers or technical directors, females. Yeah. So I suppose that it's going to be a little bit more time to see more women in higher responsibility jobs.
Yeah. I mean, as you said, you know, technical director, you are a technical director. You're a technical director of this bit of this, of this big group, which is now called Entre Canales, Domecq e Hijos. I had to make sure I wrote that down, since January 2019. And you make wine. I can't believe it. Rueda, Rías Baixas, Valdeorras, Toro, Ribera del Duero, Rioja. Have I forgotten anywhere? Nowhere else. Not Penedès yet. No. I mean, that's an amazing portfolio. I mean, do you feel particularly attached to one region or do you have to love them all equally?
I love them all equally, but because I'm very Castilian, I will say that maybe I feel more from this area. But if I need to tell you the truth, when I go to Rioja, I'm totally in love and I want to discover more and more and I enjoy it so much. And when I go to Valdeorras or even Rías Baixas, it's like, oh my God, I want to stay here. I'm just a lover of the different wine areas. And I love to stay. It's like Castilla y León is my house, I will say. And I love to get into different areas to discover how they are, what are the risk and the positive things in each of them. And for me, it's like a game. Professionally, but I feel it like a child.
I mean, are there any regions or grape varieties that you think are undervalued in Spain? You've talked about Castilla y León, maybe, you know, Sierra de Salamanca or whatever, you know, that sort of area, the high altitude areas in Castilla y León. Would you say those are underrated or are there other examples you could give us?
I think Castilla y León in so many areas are underrated and in general. We need to say that Sierra de Salamanca is an amazing place with indigenous varieties from the area, and it has higher altitude. But as you know, Spain is the country with highest altitudes after Switzerland in Europe. So even here in Castilla y León, which is a plateau, or even La Mancha, which is a plateau, you can find 700 meters on average, which is pretty high, and this is giving us a big variation on climate. But Sierra de Salamanca, I love it. Another area which I think it has a lot of potential, but is not developed economically and still a bit backwards, is Arribes del Duero. Not because I'm coming from there, but they have a lot of indigenous varieties, a lot. Yeah. And I think some of them very, very interesting. And I'm doing a small collaboration with the Itacil, which is the... Institute on Castilla y León, which is recovering all these old varieties that are close to be lost and disappear, and they are recovering them and planting them. So I'm helping them to replant some of them. And I need to tell you that from the first trials that I tried, they are incredible good varieties. And in this case, Arribes del Duero, it has a Mediterranean climate. So I think those could be varieties to adapt to the future climate change because they will be adapted better to the coolest areas in Castilla y León, and a lot of them with a lot of potential. I mean, with very high quality varieties.
Can you give us some names of the varieties?
There are Tinta Jeromo. There are Cenicienta, for example, in Rueda that I also discovered. There are a couple of them in Bierzo. Now, because we are speaking in English, I forgot some of the names in Spanish. Sometimes happen to me. I have my brain divided in two. But these two are one of the most interesting that we can find within the range and the selection. Mm. But there are another six or eight, which I quite like them.
How interesting. I mean, I love Ruffete as well, don't you? As a Ruffete Blanco, especially.
Yes. Also Brunal from Arribes, which is very cool. Mm. It's like between 10 and 12 varieties that has been selected over a lot of hundreds of them. Yeah. And I think each of them has a beauty, some of them for blending, some of them as a single varieties. And I think this is going to be an amazing step here.
How exciting, yeah.
There are a couple of them, from Tierra de León, which also, because Bierzo is more popular and Tierra de León is a little bit less known, with the Prieto Picudo, which I love it. And I think it has a lot of potential as well. And there, they also found a couple of them, which I think they are going to change some of the things.
I mean, I think people can hear just listening to you how passionate you are and how kind of dynamic you are and how excited you are about working in wine, really. I mean, I've read a couple of great quotes from you. One is, my personality is I want to do everything. And another, you said, I haven't learned to say no. So does that mean you find it difficult to delegate to other people, or do you want to do everything yourself? You want to clean all the tanks yourself?
No. For me, it's easy to delegate. Because I had very clear, since I started to work in Viñas del Zenit and Dominio Atauta at the same time, they were belonging to the same company and the same owner. But I saw, for me, this was a change in my mind where if I want to grow, I need to leave some of the things, and I want to grow. Mm. And I want the people from my team to grow up as well. I don't want people that is, because I'm not from this philosophy. I don't want people which is adjust to the chair or they just want to make the same thing every day. We need some of these people, but I want them to grow, and I want to force them to grow because I want to be able to discover different things. And if I'm attached to every single detail every day, I'm not going to be able to see other things that I need to see in order to be or to have inspiration. I need to be a little bit free about that. Yeah. And I work a lot with them in order to make them better. And I want them to study. And always I send them to do the level 2 and level 3 from Wine Spirit Education Trust. And I sign for them to every single course. It's like I tell them, like, you know me, and I'm like this. So I'm going to bring in new things all the time, and we are going to be changing things continuously. Because if not, it won't be me.
I mean, maybe one of them will go on to be a master of wine, as you are. I mean, you're one of only four in Spain, and as I said at the beginning, the only woman. What advice would you give to somebody who's starting on the course now?
I think it's an amazing path, personally and intellectually. Personally, because you grow up as a person, because you are going to be facing so many risks, and you need to grow up as well, because you are going to fight with yourself. I think this is a battle with yourself about compromise, hours of studying, rigorosity, and so many things that you need to have in order to pass this exam. It's very strict, and you need to have a lot of discipline. And this discipline is always a battle with you. And you are going to grow up personally as well, because all the people that you are going or you know through the process, students that became your friends for life, and a lot of masters of wine, even you finish or you get the title or not, all of these people is going to stay with you in one or the other way. And on the other way, you are going to grow up a lot intellectually. So if you want this change in your way of looking to the wine business, you need to fight with yourself. And at the end of the process, you grow up as a person and as a professional.
Yeah. I mean, you're encouraging people to do it, obviously.
Of course. Yeah. But you need to do some sacrifices. You need to face this like this. So you are going to have less time. You are for a while. It's not for nothing is forever. But for a while or for a few years, you need to do this compromise. And you are going to have less time with your family, less time with your friends. Mm. Basically, your life turns in working and study and resting to be well for working and study. sounds very boring, but
no, it is a bit. I know what you mean. I mean, you know, as we've said, you've got this very busy job. You're making wine in all these different regions, but I've read that you really want to make wine, sparkling wine. I mean, not just cava, but champagne and possibly even English sparkling wine. Is that true?
Oh, I would love it. This could be a dream for me. I love champagne, but I think England has a perfect conditions, very good soils, the same or similar soils than the north part of France. Mm. And this cool weather that now is very unique because the rest of the cool places are losing this cool state. Mm. And I think you can find it in England. And I know that it's very complicated because you need to work very hard with nature and with climatology, but I think it's an incredible opportunity to make a sparkling there. And the quality, the actual quality that we can find there is amazing. And when you taste it blind, you can confuse it easily.
I think we'd be very happy to have you.
Oh, I would love it, please.
I think maybe
to make a call.
We need a bit of Almudena energy in the UK.
And I feel very attached. I feel very attached to England because most likely, probably because since I met Amy on my first days, we were working with a lot of people from UK. I have my English mommy, which is a lot of time, which I didn't see her for a long time. And I love her and Mary and Steve. They were doctors in the middle of England, and I went to visit them. And they used to come every harvest to cook for us and to make a gin and tonic when we finish.
Fantastic.
This English gin and tonic, which is double size of the one that we drink here, but they were taking care of us so nice. And after them traveling so often to UK and to England, I really love it, and I feel half of my body is English. Now I'm drinking a lot of tea, and I'm very attached to my clock. I'm very sensitive to be on time.
You're an English Spaniard.
Totally. And every time that someone invites me to a party, it's like, what is the dress code? Because what? And more, I say, we need a dress code. I love this way of thinking and to making easy life, and also I like the way of enjoying life from English people.
Listen, last question, apart from you wanting to be semi-English, you got this, as we've said, this very busy job. How do you get away from wine? Do you have time to relax, to read, go walking, cook, you know, other things you like doing?
Yes, of course. We need this because if not, we get a bit crazy. And I need to rest time to time because this energy sometimes overpass me. So I love to cook. If I want to cook for family or friends, I love it. And I would say that the things that relax me more is going for walks in the mountains or in the countryside, very isolated places, just to get in harmony with the nature. Or also I love the sea or
Fantastic.
The beach, just for walk, listen to the sea and relax a bit.
Yeah. Fantastic. Listen, it's been fantastic talking to you. I love your passion, your energy, your sense of humour and the amazing wines you're making. So I hope to see you either in the UK or in Spain very soon. Maybe we can all travel.
Yes, hopefully. I want to see you everywhere. This means that we are going to be travelling around.
Fantastic.
Thank you very much.
Ciao. Bye.
Ciao.
What a woman. I could chat to Almudena all day. I hope you enjoyed the podcast as much as I did. Next week on Cork Talk, my guest is the sweet wine superstar, Gerhard Kracker, from Ilmitz in Austria. See you then. Thanks for listening to Cork Talk. If you want to read more reports, articles, and tasting notes by me, go to my website, timatkin.com. You can also follow me on Twitter, @timatkin, and on Instagram, @timatkinmw. See you next week.